Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And this is part two of our two-parter on 3D printing. 3D printers of the gods. The idea here, and the snazzy title, of course, refers to the idea that 3D printers essentially allow almost any idea that's out there to take physical form, which in a way is kind of godlike. And it forces us to really rethink what the future is going to be like, what our relationship with objects is going to be, and really also makes us sort of think about what our relationship with objects is now. We talked in the last podcast about some of the current things that are going on, such as Dita Von Teese's wearing a dress that it was 3D printed, people trying to 3D print the perfect plastic gun, like an actual gun that kills people.
Octogenarians printing out novelty adult toys.
Exactly.
Adult novelty toys.
Exactly. and today we are going to, we talked a little bit about the future in the last one, mm-hmm. but this time we're going to go a little more detailed on that. We're going to talk about some of the near future revolutions in 3D printing that are really going to change the world.
It's true because although 3D printers aren't quite the transporter devices we hoped for at this point, the fact of the matter is that they are rearranging matter and they are sort of defying space and time when it comes to objects and to consumerism and to making what you want when you want it.
So some of the things that are going to be happening very soon with 3D printing that are going to change everything. First of all, we're looking at 3D printing reaching the industrial strength level. Mm-hmm. Now, 3D printing, as we've mentioned before, has been a part of industry for about 20 years now, and it's been useful in rapidly producing prototypes in some cases. But we're talking about a situation where 3D printing will be able to produce objects of high quality, industrial grade, that can be a part of automobiles, etc. Now, some automobiles already have some 3D printing parts, but we're talking about an age when pretty much all parts are going to be produced by 3D printing as opposed to traditional subtractive methods such as printing the pieces out of a sheet of metal or using a mold to pouring a mold to create the device.
Yeah, because, I mean, at the end of the day, when you're talking about the future of 3D printing, you're talking about materials that are lighter, that can be made faster, mm-hmm. and can be customized. So it's a perfect fit for manufacturing. So, you know, you're going to see more of these printers in factories just printing out parts. You also see them in the nano manufacturing industry, which we'll talk more about. And then you're going to see it just in actual, like, hey, we're going to build something. We're going to build a building. And so imagine large blocks of, like, custom building materials being printed out on a job site.
Yeah. And to go back to prototyping real quick, you're just going to see that speeded up even more. The ability to quickly produce a working prototype for a new product, it's going to be exponentially improved.
Yeah, in fact, the D-shaped printer, which was created by Enrico Dini, is capable now of printing a two-story building complete with rooms, stairs, pipes, and partitions, and it uses nothing but sand and inorganic binding compound, and then the resulting material has the same durability as reinforced concrete with, this is super cool, the look of marble.
Wow.
Of course, now you can only use this on rounded structures, but the process itself takes approximately about a fourth of the time as traditional buildings. And it doesn't really require any specialized knowledge or skill set.
Yeah, because a lot of we get into the idea of printing nanomaterials. And we've talked before about, like, whether we're talking about space elevators or super tall buildings, we always come back around to the use of nanomaterials, because when you're building things from the smallest level up, which to a certain extent is 3D printing in itself, it's the idea that I'm starting small and building everything up from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start really small, if you're building things up from the smallest structures possible, then you're able to create super strong materials capable of tethering a space elevator in place or creating the sort of skyscrapers that right now we can only dream of.
Yeah, it doesn't change physics, but it changes the way that materials act in the realm of physics.
Right.
Which is really cool, because that is really liberating as someone who is a designer and someone who is trying to do something like, say, a spacecraft.
Yeah. I mean, it's the difference between me sewing two things together, or me sewing up a hole in my hoodie or something, as opposed to an actual seamstress or a sewing machine doing it. In the difference between a big visible stitch and an invisible stitch. I mean, it's just the finer level of detail, the finer grade of craftsmanship that you get when you build things up from that very small level.
And when you're speaking about building up things from a very small level, of course, you have to start thinking about the medical ramifications of this.
Because we are built up from a very small level.
Exactly. And we have experiments in printing soft tissue that are underway now. But the idea is that if you can master that, you may begin to print veins and arteries to be used in operations. And then, taken to the extreme, you can then print organs.
You're not even taking it to the extreme. The extreme is, of course, printing whole bodies.
Yeah. I mean, which not only would vanquish the whole organ donor problem that we have, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, here's another me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep it in storage until I need to replace myself.
And this is a great example of 3D printer of the gods here, because we're essentially talking about a 3D printer creating objects, creating a person as nature creates a person. You know, the idea that it's created from the smallest piece. It's grown.
Yeah, there is an element of biomimicry about this. We'll talk about this more when we talk about 4D printing. But it is interesting that we're getting sort of back to the basics when we're talking about 3D printing, because it really is sort of saying, let's take nature's way of building up and see if we can recreate this process in a machine. Consumerism.
Yes, this is going to be huge. Yeah.
I mean, this is what I think is going to be one of the most interesting aspects about 3D printing, because I think it will greatly change our behavior. And you and I talked about this in the last podcast, the last episode, is that, you know, one day you could go to Amazon and you could click on a box there that says, I want to customize this, because Amazon has now decided to use this technology with their companies and their manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be something pretty rote, like, hey, I need to get this new sink, but I really would love to have, I don't know, some sort of crazy design of the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
In it. Or, I don't know.
We already have some of those options, for instance, with some of our digital and some non-digital media. You want a book? Okay. Do you want it in hardback? You want it in softback? You want it in paperback? Or do you want it digital?
Right.
And how do you want that album? Do you want it in vinyl? You want it on CD? You want it on a retro cassette, which is coming back in some cases? Do you want it digitally? All right. Well, we have five options for that. You want it in FLAC? You want it in MP3? You want it it just goes on and on. So you'll see that kind of stuff when you buy things. All right. What size do you want it in? What color do you want it? Also, upload the dimensions of your hand. Upload your actual physical dimensions, and we'll make sure that it fits you to a T.
Yeah, so try to imagine that. So let's say that you want a specific design that you can get to pick from all these stock files of this specific design or stock art. And then, you can upload. If the object relates to your body, then you upload your own dimensions. And then Amazon surely will deliver that to you within the hour, because now, they're trying to do same-day delivery. So since we're extrapolating the future, we have to think about this, five years out.
Yeah, and you're going to see that it's going to be like with any technological innovation. There are going to be companies that adapt and shift and survive, and then there are going to be ones that fall to the wayside, and there are going to be new entrepreneurs that pop up that are like, hey, this is how people are going to be consuming. What can we do to game it? There are going to be products that come out that are specifically aimed at 3D printing.
Well, see, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it really does change the landscape of companies and their ability to produce. So, I wonder, does Amazon then begin to produce items instead of just distribute? Because essentially they can take over. If you can print anything, then why even have manufacturers that you distribute? Why not just be the point person?
Yeah,
that process.
And then, to what extent do these companies become the means of creating? You know, I mean, because like we mentioned before, I mean, everybody wants to be an artist. Everyone wants to be a writer. Everyone wants to be a musician to varying degrees. The internet is a great example of all sorts of different people producing something and wanting to share it with the world, and then take that and translate it to the world of objects. So do these companies end up becoming more and more involved in user-generated content, like the Wikipedia of objects?
Right. And, are storefronts replaced by just a storefront?
Yeah. Do you go to the mall and it's just one 3D printing kiosk, well, probably multiple kiosks, where you go in and you print out the things you want. I mean, maybe you have a situation where the stores are still there so that you can shop. People like to look at things before they buy them. But then when you decide, you print it out. You go to the kiosk, you print it out, and you can print out, your new shoes, your new dress, the toy for the kid, and maybe even your hamburger.
I was about to say, you could also print, if you're a little bit, you feel like you need a nosh, then hey, you can, this is an ability that Cornell University's Fab at Home project can actually do right now. They use gel-like substances that can be combined with other materials, including artificial flavor, to mimic the taste and mouthfeel of many different foods.
Yeah, this was really interesting because they also talked a little bit about the uncanny valley of foods with this because the gel-like substance called hydrocolloids is apparently a little unsettling. Like, it's filled with artificial flavoring, and you can print it, say, in the shape of a turkey leg, sure, but if it doesn't taste like a turkey leg, it's going to be a little weird. So they've really kind of decided that they need to work on the taste first and then worry about printing it out into the actual shapes, which makes sense. And maybe to a certain extent it makes me think of candy, right, and specifically banana-flavored candy. You ever had banana-flavored candy?
No, I don't.
It doesn't
think
taste
I have.
Like bananas.
Okay.
And to a certain extent, orange candy doesn't taste like oranges. But you get into that area of how close can the taste be to the thing and still get away with it? And to what extent does it become a new thing? Because when you're eating orange candy, it's nothing like an actual orange in flavor or in texture. But
I know. I was just thinking back to the 20s, and we talked about when we did the food episode, and we were talking about the candy that became a stand-in for a meal. Because remember, people didn't have much money, and they had those turkey meals. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't know if it actually was supposed to taste like a roast turkey or roast chicken.
No, I think I think it had chocolate in it.
But yeah, I think it was the idea.
The idea was, hey, you need a meal? Here's a meal. Peel it back and eat it.
So we have evidence that we've done this before, and certainly if you don't have the resources, then maybe you can accept that. And after all, it's a shot of glucose anyways.
Look at some of the stuff people eat already. Like a chicken nugget is nothing like anything real. You look at stuff with pink slime. I mean, we're already manufacturing unreal food out of strange things. People love it.
Pink slime is found in hamburger meat, right?
Yeah. So I have no doubt that 3D printing could easily create something that people would love, if not tolerate.
Okay,
and specifically when you're talking about, like, say, long-term space missions.
Yeah.
I mean, these are environments where, yes, you want people in space to want to eat because sometimes there's less of an appetite there. But ultimately, survival food, right?
Well, and so that just made me think about the parallels between the Uncanny Valley and simulacrums for food, right? Because there are some people who will say the Uncanny Valley isn't as uncanny or creepier as we think.
Right.
We see a robot that's supposed to look like a human or act like a human or move like a human, and they don't because they are not, and it unsettles us. But we get used to things, right?
Yeah, I mean, new food is Uncanny Valley when you first have it.
Like, that's true.
Have Thai food for the first time, and you'll be like, this is a little uncanny. But, you'll love it in a week. So,
guarantee you.
Guaranteed. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk even more about the future of 3D printing, and we're going to talk about 4D printing.
Wowza!
All right, we're back. And we're going to talk here about 4D printing. And just to be clear, the term 4D printing is a little bit of science headline bait.
It's misleading.
Yeah. It looks great in a headline, but when you really get down to the meat of it, you're not really printing in space and time. No more than you're always printing in space and time.
It's kind of like 3D printing on steroids. And what we're talking about 4D printing is passive self-assembly systems.
Yeah, which is still pretty awesome. Don't let me underplay it.
Mm-mm. It's very cool. Self-assembly MIT researcher Skylar Tibbetts is sort of the face of this right now in terms of self-assembly. And when I talk about it being on steroids, we're talking about it allowing 3D printers allowing to print parts to self-assemble and reassemble into a number of products. So each part would be comprised of a regular rigid plastic layer along with an outer layer made of smart materials, not dumb ones. And then when they're submerged in water, the smart materials absorb and they expand and they cause the parts to move and form a pre-specified object.
It's like if you're wearing tight jeans. and then you get rained on really heavily, or you fall in a swimming pool,
uh-huh.
and then they start to shrink up, and then your form changes, and you go into like stiff-legged mode because you can't move your legs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. The outer layer is the blue jeans, and then the inner layer is you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what's really interesting, and this is from a TED Talk that you sent me, that Tibbet is talking about the future of this and why it makes so much sense. He's saying that currently we build skyscrapers with about 500,000 to 1 million parts, mm-hmm. which all told takes about 2 years.
Yeah, and that's not even counting the dead gangsters in the concrete.
Exactly,
yeah.
Or the vampires.
Yes.
And then he says, though, that we should look toward natural systems to get a better idea of how to use 4D or self-assembly. He says that we have proteins that have 2 million types. They can fold in 10,000 nanoseconds. And he says we also have DNA with 3 billion base pairs we can replicate in roughly an hour. So he said that out of all of this complexity in our natural systems, there's still this idea that they're really efficient at what they do, far more efficient than anything that we can build, and far more complex than anything that we can build. And so he says we should look toward this model because it's really good in making something out of as little energy as possible.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're talking about, again, little, like a 3D printed stick that when water is added, it becomes a cube. But he's talking long term, the idea of the self-assembly of large scale structures, which is pretty phenomenal. I like how in the talk he gets a little philosophic too and talks about ultimately objects that have desire. Not only do we desire them, but they have a desire in the sense that there is something that they will be. I mean, it gets a little weird.
They want to be something?
Yeah, when you get into one, I mean, it's kind of like when you're talking about memory. Like, say, a spring having memory. A spring, it doesn't have memory in the sense that we speak of it, but it does have engineering and a physics level of memory. And this would be that same level of desire. So you could also argue that, say, my earbuds always have a desire to break after 1 year.
Well, this kind of goes back to Susan Blackmore when she talks about Dawkins. She talks about memes and how humans are just meme machines, right? Mm-hmm. We're meant to communicate certain messages and over and over again and just spread the memes. But then she says technology is really the thing that we're spreading. So that's why she calls them teams. And so I think about this in that instance. Like, we are creating the technology to ultimately reproduce itself.
Yeah, brings us back into the world of nanotech.
Well, I was going to say, really at a very small scale, which is now possible in nano 3D printing.
Right.
I mean, because we're talking about really fine resolutions that enable the creation of intricately structured sculptures as tiny, 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 tiny as a grain of sand.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a great video. We'll try to remember to post this, but it shows that in 50 seconds, this aircraft is created through a nano 3D printer. And if you look at it through, obviously, this like magnified, you can see the details. Mm-hmm. And it is perfectly scale. It's a beautiful rendering, and it is an object, and it is as big as a tiny grain of salt.
Yeah, I mean, it comes back again to what I've been talking about with the idea of building things with the smallest parts possible.
Mm-hmm.
The more the smaller the building blocks, the more power you have over the structure, over the ultimate finished product. It's like with Legos. Think back to the Legos you had when you were really young, where they were kind of big and boxy because they would be harder to fit in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the smaller Legos you eventually grew into. Which blocks allow you to create the more detailed model? The smaller blocks, of course.
Of course. And then when you think about something that we mentioned before, the gaming controllers, in which mm-hmm. there's the ability to lay down electronics on those objects that are 3D printed, and you look at nano printing, and you know it's just a matter of time where you can get the same sort of electronics into the object. Then you start to think more about what does the future look like long-term, 50 years from now. It's not just about creating nano-printed scaffolding to grow tissue on or to use in other nano-manufacturing parts. There is a real ability to, say, create a robot that is at the nanoscale.
Right.
And what happens then?
Well, then we have the idea that we have machines that can repair themselves. We have structures that can repair themselves, buildings that can heal, bridges that can build themselves, little tiny robots that can peek into your private life, We were talking about this the other day when we were shooting a video.
Yeah, we were saying that, I mean, how do you combat that? Well, you have your own little army of nanorobots to combat.
Your own immune system, really, of nanobots to protect your privacy and your interests.
Yeah.
And we all kind of live, we're just all crawling with them like fleas. And maybe they're also programmed to cut our hair and to groom ourselves.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Other considerations, we talked about this when we talked about the Anthropocene. This is the idea that we are now in the age of man and that human activity has left a stratigraphic signal in the soil.
And scars in the earth and the chemical signatures, et cetera.
Yeah, and we find this in ice cores, right? There's data retrieved from glacial ice cores that show the beginning of a growth in atmospheric concentrations of several greenhouse gases, in particular CO2 and CH4. And the starting date actually coincides with James Watt's invention of the steam engine in 1784. So you begin to see this layer of sediment. So the question is, you know, if a human or some other intelligent being were to look at the soil 1,000 years from now, would they look at the soil and say, ah, this is the year that they really began to use a 3D printer because now we have this huge polymer sediment.
Yeah, this is the age in which they took all available mass and used it to print a whole bunch of nonsense. So you just have to, and just drown themselves. And again, I come back to the idea of the internet vomiting into the physical world as 3D printing is this gateway by which the internet and all of its nonsense and all of its beauty and all of its horror can actually take physical form.
Well, and don't you kind of think about this as another prong in the Internet of Things? We talk about the Internet of Things being that that data is alive around us at all times. In other words, you know, you could have a refrigerator that could tell you if you needed eggs or your eggs were expired. And, you know, this is just another idea of how objects play into this.
I like to think of it in terms, too, of our work printer. Like, think of all the things that you find printed out that people have forgotten about. You find, like, say, you know, detailed tax information, legal information, personal information, private correspondences.
Resumes.
Recipes, work. Once I found somebody had written, and it wasn't me, somebody else in the office had written like a large portion of like a sci-fi novel or something. It was just sitting there on the printer. If we had 3D printers, what kind of stuff would you find there just sitting there on the desk or clogged up in the printer? Would you find like...
And by the way, we're not giving anything away when we say that someone wrote a chunk of sci-fi novel here because there's a good many people here.
Yeah,
I
can't even narrow down who it might have been at the time. But
now, the manifesto on popcorn, there's only one person.
But just think, you know, you'd go to the printer and then there's somebody has printed out, you know, a size perfect dress for themselves that they were going to wear that night and left early and forgot to pick up. Someone printed out some sort of rather personal adult device that, you know, they could be fired for. Someone else printed out just a toy that they thought was interesting. Oh, they needed another action figure to go on their desk. So they printed out 8 of them by accidentally hitting the button 8 times. I mean, you can just go on and on.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out if this is glorious or awful.
I know. That's
or a little of both.
That's the question we always ask of technology. And probably, a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. A little more stuff to blow your mind there with 3D printing and 4D printing. And we would love to hear from everyone. What are your thoughts on the future of 3D and 4D printing? How do you think it's going to change our life? How would it change your life? How do you think it's going to change manufacturing? How do you think it's going to change business? How do you think it's going to change the way we interact with objects? And to what extent are personalized, like handcrafted objects? I mean, I can't imagine it would go away. There's still going to be a value for things that are created in the old ways, things that are created by hand. You know, it'll be the same way that people are really into craft beers. People will still be into the idea of say, a miniature that was created with a mold rather than a 3D printer.
But at the same time, intellectual property, will that become a really archaic term?
Yeah, the legal ramifications are crazy in and of themselves. So, hey, let us know what you think. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr. We are Stuff to Blow Your Mind on both of those. And also check us out on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind. And there's different content on all three of those. So don't think that they're all just replications of the same material.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.